Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. 4th Street in Sunbury is where you find Sunbury Motors. Routes 11 and 15, Sunbury Motors Kia. Lenape Solar. Yes, the Lenape Solar Hotline. We now bring in the guy with a passion for Little League Baseball, Kevin Herr.
I have a passion for a lot of things. Little League Baseball, one of the many. The Olympics would be another one, but that's another 2 years away.
Well, you also love Steelers football.
That's true.
And it's time now to bring in Tony DeFazio of the Pittsburgh Sports Report. And, Tony, let's get to it. How is our man Mike Wallace doing today?
That is a favorite topic, and the answer is the same, although we might be close to actually having an answer soon. Seems like Wallace, according to his best friend on the team, Mike Taylor, is going to be in town this weekend. One of the funniest things is listening to Mike Tomlin answer that question, and it's, I'll see him when I see him. I'll see him when he arrives. We'll talk about Mike when he's here. It's a variation of ways to say the same thing, which is stop asking me about Mike Wallace. But it does look like the Mike Wallace watch is coming to an end here soon. This weekend, apparently, is when he'll finally grace the rest of his teammates with his presence.
How far behind is he?
You know, it's a great question. I mean, you have to imagine he's fairly far behind because of the new offense. If this was a situation, you know, James Harrison is an example of a guy who's injured right now, who is hoping to come back and play before the first game. And Harrison just said, listen, you know, I need to get some practice. I need to make sure I'm healthy, but I don't need that many reps because not a whole lot's changed. I've been in this defense for a lot of years now, you know, and I know what I'm doing. I know where I need to be. That's not the case with Mike Wallace. So, you know, he's definitely going to be behind a little bit. I don't even think that the starters on this team offensively are quite there yet with this offense. So he's going to be behind, but a fair point is, you know, what are they going to ask Mike Wallace to do? Because it hasn't been all that complicated in his short NFL career so far. It's been a lot of, you know, go over the top and spread the field a little bit. So he can still run fast, and as long as he can do that and as long as his hands haven't changed, he'll be able to help just by getting back into camp.
Yeah, the second half of last season, teams adjusted to him, and they took him effectively out of the offense.
They did, and, you know, the guy who benefited from that also has benefited from Mike Wallace not being in camp, and that's Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown seemed to get better and better and better as the season went along last year. Wallace definitely slumped. I mean, just like you said, Steve, his first half stats compared to his second half stats look like two different guys. I mean, they are, you know, night and day. But he still has that speed. He still has the capability of extending the field. And that's what Ben Roethlisberger misses, and that's what the team misses. And, you know, you have to hope that Wallace is able to put that, you know, A and B together a little bit. And that may be why the Steelers have not given him the contract offer that he wanted, because he's not a complete wide receiver. He's a good one, but he's not a complete wide receiver yet.
Interesting experiment during the game the other night, because it's the preseason's time to experiment, but there was a significant amount of time where Ben Roethlisberger went no huddle. How did he like that, and how did Todd Haley like the results of it?
Ben Roethlisberger loves it. Roethlisberger, has been campaigning for that as often as possible. That's exactly what he wants. He wants to do that as much as he can. He feels like the quicker he goes. He's never going to be Peyton Manning running that no huddle where it's bam 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 and he's changing the play at the line of scrimmage all the time, but I do think that I think that it's something Roethlisberger likes. It's something he feels comfortable with, and I also think it's something that Todd Haley is willing to let his quarterback do. I think that's part of establishing the trust between Haley and Roethlisberger.
Running game, the Steelers, of course. I don't care whether you go back to. From John Henry Johnson to Franco and Rocky, all the way through to Barry Foster, to Bettis. I mean, to even Mendenhall. I don't think any teams had a better lineage of running backs and a constant of a solid running game than the Steelers. What's the state of the running game at the moment?
That's a great question, because it's nowhere near what you just described. You mentioned Mendenhall at the end of that long list, and I don't think that fans have given Mendenhall the credit that he deserves. He's not a great running back, but he's a guy who's run for over 3,000 yards over the past 3 years, has been an integral part of that offense. He can take it to the house anytime, and he can catch the ball out of the backfield as well. He's obviously going to be out at least into October. His backup, who the Steelers were semi-comfortable with, Isaac Redman, he's got a hip and groin issue that I think is a little more serious than I think people first anticipated. He's going to be out for a while. And after that, you know, it looks like it's Jonathan Dwyer, but he has experience issues. He's not the Steelers are not comfortable necessarily with him being the man, but it looks like he's the best of the lot right now. Chris Rainey's exciting. He's fast. He's a lightning-quick guy who can make a lot of things happen with the ball in his hand, but he's a very, very small guy. He's not an every-down back. And he also lacks experience, and we saw him put the ball on the ground for the first time in the Steelers' last game. He took a big hit. He coughed the ball up. So, this running game, I think, has a long way to go, and I think it's going to handicap this offense for a while early in the season. I do think this is a major problem for the Steelers right now.
Do you envision the Steelers maybe being a 2-1 pass-to-run offense?
I don't think they want that, but, again, you look at their options. I mean, you have to go with with what you have. And if they don't have the comfort in giving a back, the ball over and over again and kind of establishing a defense first, run-driven type of an offense, Todd Haley has shown the willingness, to use the tools that he has. He was a pass-happy guy when he was the coordinator in Arizona, and they had Larry Fitzgerald and Kurt Warner and Steve Breastin and Anquan Boldin. They don't have quite those tools here in Pittsburgh, but you've got a pretty good quarterback in Roethlisberger. If Wallace gets back, you've got him and Antonio Brown. You've got a pretty darn good tight end in Heath Miller. That may be the way to go. Rather than trying to jam the square peg into a round hole, maybe it is 2-1 sounds high, Steve, but they may need to lean in that direction.
And they drafted offensive line. DeCastro, they drafted Adams. They're trying to get them in the mix where Pouncey's the old man of the group, ironically. How's that group developed? I mean, I know it's slow at times, but still, have you seen the progress there?
I think there has been some progress. I know that Mike Adams had a very, very rough first game. There was a period of 9 plays where he gave up 2.5 sacks over 9 plays, which is really devastating, obviously, to an offense. But at the same time, this is a guy who, that's not a good thing, but it's something that's not unexpected. They expected Mike Adams to struggle. He has struggled a little bit. He's also looked pretty good at times. When you throw two rookies out there, you're going to have them make rookie mistakes. Even the great ones make rookie mistakes. So, I think we're going to have it's going to be a slow process. It's going to, just like you said, it's going to be slow. It's going to be a lot of learning on the job. But I think they feel pretty good in their investment. They're going to have 4 offensive linemen that are third year or less on that line, and Willie Colon is a guy who, if he can stay healthy, is a pretty darn good player, especially at the right guard spot where he's playing right now. So, the left guard spot where he's playing right now. So, they like that line. They spent $100 million on Ben Roethlisberger. It's about time to invest in some protection. They think they've done that, even though I think it's going to be slow going. I think they're going to be happy with the result.
I know Ike Taylor would be in the spotlight because he picked off a pass and ran it back for a touchdown. But even if he didn't, he probably should still be in the spotlight. What are you seeing from him that could allow him to be that shutdown corner the Steelers really need?
I think a lot of it is confidence. And Ike had such a great season last year. It's a shame the way it ended. He probably had the worst game of his NFL career in that loss to Denver. He was victimized over and over again. But his season as a whole was just an outstanding season. That's a position of weakness for the Steelers, at least it was last year, and they really needed Ike Taylor to come through. And I think his teammates looked upon him as a leader now. He was a new guy from a small school, but that was a long time ago. And I think the confidence is a big part of his game right now. He plays a very, very physical game, which fits right into Dick LeBeau's system. And again, I think it took him a while, but he knows that defense in and out. He's in tremendous shape, And he's a guy who likes to talk a lot, but he's a guy who works extremely hard. He has the respect of his teammates, and I think he is thriving now that people are looking up to him as a leader. You know, the Steelers had to replace a lot of leaders, but sometimes organically, you know, you develop new ones. And I think Ike Taylor is one of those, you know, one of those new leaders on that team.
Very pleased to be joined by Tony DeFazio of the Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, what do you like about this defense so far?
Well, I think I like the secondary. I think I like the defensive line. We talked about, you know, having to replace players, and Aaron Smith retired. You know, they lost Casey Hampton is out right now. Chris Hoke retired. So there's a lot of big bodies and a lot of leadership and a lot of veteran experience that's gone from that defensive line. But I think they have some replacements who are very, very capable, starting with a name that a lot of people don't know, and that's Steve McClendon in the middle. He was a non-drafted free agent a couple of years ago. You know, went on and off the practice squad, on and off the roster in 2010. Last year he played in just about every game, started a few. And this year, even if Casey Hampton's healthy, Steve McClendon might be the best nose tackle on that team. So I think that solidifies that position. On the end, you've got, again, two young guys who are playing pretty well. Ziggy Hood, who's getting better and better and better, quietly becoming a pretty solid defensive end in that system. And Cameron Hayward, who has had a pretty good camp, who is a heck of an athlete, and if he gets going, he can dominate at times. So I think they're pretty solid along the defensive line. They've got some depth there as well. Brett Keisel is a guy who I didn't mention yet, and obviously Casey Hampton is going to be coming back from injury. What's not to like, I think, is the linebackers. A ton of injuries at that position. They lost James Ferrier, and everybody, it seems like, who is capable of stepping in and playing has been injured. And that includes Stevenson Sylvester. That includes Jason Worlds, an outside backer who was a number two pick a couple of years ago. They've just got a lot of injuries there. James Harrison hasn't even practiced yet, so that's going to be an issue. That's usually a big position of productivity for the Steelers. Well, they can't even get guys on the field throughout camp so far this year.
Exhibition or preseason game number 3 coming up. The fourth one, of course, is that's just roster spot time. So this is the key one. What do you think they would like to see in this one to feel like they're just about set for the opener?
Well, I think first and foremost, the thing that needs to happen is they've got to have somebody at that running back spot step up, carry the ball a lot, show they can take, you know, consecutive carries, show they can play consecutive series, and show they're ready to be the guy when the season starts, because I'm not so sure Isaac Redman is going to be up to that health-wise when the season starts. Even if Redman is, they need to establish a backup. So to me, that's the number one thing they need to establish. You talked about what kind of offense we're going to see. I think they need to know what they have in terms of a running game before they can establish any kind of identity on offense. So to me, that's the number one thing, and something that's going to go hand-in-hand with that is some continued development along the offensive line. David DeCastro has been pretty solid. Marcus Gilbert has been pretty solid. He's a second-year guy from Florida, and obviously they want to see Mike Adams continue to improve a little bit. If Adams is not ready to go, they feel like they can be set and have that position at least babysat, for lack of a better term, by Max Starks, who is expected to play this weekend as well. So those are the two main things offensively. Defensively, I think they're still trying to figure out some spots in the nickel defense, and they do need some linebackers to step up and show they can play every down as well.
Tony, have the officials, in your opinion, been an issue in any of the Steelers' preseason games so far?
You know, I just think the inconsistency has been an issue. It's so funny enough that I think the NFL officials' best friends all of a sudden are going to be the head coaches once the season starts, because those guys are used to a certain level, and I just don't think we're getting there yet. I think these guys have to work as a team. They haven't really done that all that much. They're just getting used to doing that. Now, usually, you know, you're used to working with the same crew. You know each other's, tendencies and so forth. And I don't think that's been happening. And let's face it, Steve, this is a pretty big step down. These aren't the next best guys. These are the next to the next to the next to best guys. We're talking about Division II and Division III officials here. Just trying to learn, learning new rules, understanding new rules, making the decisions that they need to make, and having the confidence, to make those decisions in a flash. So I don't think it's been too much of an issue yet, but I don't think there's been a lot of consistency, and I think you're going to really see it come to a head when the games start to count.
The bottom line is the difference between Division II and Division III in the NFL, the speed difference is unbelievable. Everybody can run, and that's the part that they can't adjust to that. They just can't adjust to it.
I think that's a great point. And again, you know, you're right. I mean, you know, will they get up to speed? You know, maybe in some areas they can, but there, you're right. There are certain things they're not going to be able to do. And you're right. I think that is the bottom line.
In the context, this will be the final question for you, Tony, and we'll let you get running. But in the context that he is a rookie quarterback, Andrew Luck did play against the Steelers the other night. So, again, in the context that this is a rookie trying to cut his teeth in the NFL, even as the number one overall pick, what did you think of him?
I'll tell you what, if we're going to grade on a curve, you know, I give the kid an A. I thought he was excellent. I thought his ability to, you know, to roll with the punches, to go through the ups and downs of playing against a defense like the Steelers, you know, was excellent. He made some mistakes. He definitely did. He telegraphed some passes. He had some trouble reading the defense from time to time. But, you know, he's a guy who just kept getting off the canvas and kept coming at them. And I think the players were very impressed with him. I know that was the talk, you know, of the media folks, was how impressive Andrew Luck was. I almost called him Oliver. But how impressive Andrew Luck was. And, you know, to me, his resiliency and his resolve are going to be the two things that are going to be tested the most this season. And, you know, I think he passed in those areas with flying colors. He's athletic, probably more athletic than I think some people realized. And, you know, obviously we know all about his arm and what he can do when he gets protection. So he's got some weapons as well downfield. So, you know, I'm impressed with the guy. Just one game. You hate to read too much into a preseason game. But, yeah, I thought he passed with flying colors.
Always a great resource for us, Tony. Appreciate very, very much the candid answers and the great coverage that you give all the time in the Pittsburgh Sports Report.
Always enjoy it. Thanks for having me on.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
At Sunbury Motors, the rewards are many. And the regrets? Well, the regrets just don't happen. That's because no matter what vehicle you buy from Sunbury Motor Company, you are guaranteed to be satisfied. Not only when you first get that new or used car, truck, or SUV, but when you have your vehicle serviced, you'll always have the best experience possible from start to finish. Talk about variety being the spice of life? Well, at Sunbury Motor Company, you have the luxury of choosing from all the best brands like Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln. Each and every vehicle comes with awesome service and financing plans that fit your budget and are super easy to afford. You can even submit a financing application online and calculate the value of your trade-in. Ask about Sunbury Motors Tire Rewards Program. Service, parts, body shop, and quick lane too. New or used, the best vehicles come from Sunbury Motor Company. Visit sunburymotors.com to see all their new and used inventory and visit the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury or Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Sunbury Motors. Great to see the Sunbury Motors people last night. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And also, Let It Be Solar, sponsoring our hotline at 1-800-795-9565. We have not had what you call a lot of time to take calls today. So,
but it's been an informative program.
That's what it's supposed to be.
That's right.
At least in our own minds, that's what we invented. Our number 1-800-795-9565. And again, for us, it was just great to be out there last night. I know our staff loved it. It was an open bar. So, hey. You okay there?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm very good.
Well, don't brag.
No, I'm good. I'm content. Mike Wallace may be coming back by the end of the week. I'm not happy that the situation at running back sounds kind of grim. Tony did not give me any room to feel comfortable there. And he has me a little nervous at linebacker, which is something I knew was going to be a problem with the injuries, but I didn't think it would be that bad. So all in all, I'm actually in good shape considering the news that I just got.
You know what's interesting? And I was thinking about this, and it's this, you know, and Sarah will perk her ears up on this. You think about the Ravens, for example. Like I just did a big thing on the Steelers, right?
Right.
Steelers have a national name. I mean, national cred.
Absolutely. They draw at home and on the road.
Patriots do. Giants do. Packers do. Right? I mean, they have national cred. You know, the Ravens, outside of Maryland, there are very few Ravens fans outside of Maryland.
Might find a couple in Ohio.
But even in Maryland, for example, you still have people down by the Beltway that are Redskins fans.
That's true.
And this is not a cut. I'm not kidding around because Sarah works there or anything like that. But I've always found that interesting. Ever since they moved to Baltimore, you know, the Colts had kind of because the Unitas and so forth, had really a national cred to it. The Ravens don't. And they've even won a Super Bowl. I mean, you don't see like a big following out there. I mean, some teams just do and some don't. Just turns out that the Steelers do and the Ravens don't. Odd.
I'm not upset about it.
Maybe because it's so close to Pittsburgh and Philly and Washington. I don't know. Interesting. Final half hour is going to be an open line. Three guests coming up tomorrow.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. I would recommend very strongly that you go to the New Yorker and read Jeffrey Toobin's interview with Graham Spanier. It is highly intriguing. It's very expansive. Toobin spent a couple of days here in State College talking to Dr. Spanier at his apartment. And it's very interesting. Going from top to bottom, just taking a look at it. Just take a look. One line. I always consulted with him on NCAA rule changes and Big Ten issues. He always had opinions, and sometimes he would persuade me, and sometimes I would actually persuade him. But anything you have heard about how Joe was, quote, the boss of the university? Not so. I mean, this is... It's very, very interesting.
We'll put that up on the SteveJonesShow.com webpage. We'll get a link to that so you can easily get to it.
Yeah, it's very interesting. He talks a lot about his respect for Joe and what he's done and so forth. And then later on, about the issues involved. So I would recommend that. He is going to be doing, as Sarah said, an interview tonight. It's already been taped, by the way. It's going to be on Nightline this evening.
Dun, 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 dun. Sorry, I didn't have the sounder right away.
No, it'll be the first time you've watched Nightline since the Iraq War, but it's on Nightline tonight.
Probably true, yeah. Roll your DVRs for Nightline.
Yeah. After meeting Tim Curley and Gary Schultz, Tim Curley and Gary Schultz came to me with a heads up. I don't know if they said it was from Joe Paterno or if it was obvious that it came from Joe Paterno. They said, we received a report that a member of the athletic department staff, after a workout in one of our athletic facilities, saw Jerry Sandusky in a locker room with one of his kids, meaning one of the second mile kids. And it was reported that they were horsing around in the shower. Now, they either used the word horsing around or horseplay. And the staff member wasn't sure what he saw because it was indirect and around the corner.
And I remember, this is Grand Spaniard, I remember asking two questions. Are you sure that's how it was described to you, horsing around? And the answer was yes from both Gary and Tim. And are you sure that's all that was said to you? And again, the answer was yes. I remember for a moment, sort of figuratively, scratching our heads and thinking about what's an appropriate way to follow up on horsing around. I had never gotten a report like that before. We agreed in that meeting that we need to do two things. Tim Curley needs to talk with Jerry Sandusky and explain to him that this is unacceptable to us. We don't know what Sandusky would say. I don't know him. In fact, he said earlier that he'd only met Sandusky once. Says, I'm not sure if Gary Schultz knew him. Tim probably knew him well, but he needed to understand that it didn't feel right to us and it wouldn't look right to people. It's not appropriate. He was no longer an employee of the university. He had been retired for 3 years. So we didn't have any hold over him in that way. But he was with the Second Mile, and we thought that we should tell the president of the Second Mile that we were going to give Jerry this directive. And we'd like their support for that. And we don't want any Second Mile kids being brought into the athletic shower facilities. I only learned that Mike McQuarrie was associated with this 2 days after the grand jury presentment came out last November by reading it in the newspaper. So Mike McQuarrie's name was never mentioned to me. I didn't even know it was in Lash Building. Didn't even know the time of day. Didn't know the age of the child. I assumed it was a high school kid. That's all I knew. I don't recall hearing anything else about it. Don't recall hearing anything else about it. Until Tim Curley told me sometime later, 2 or 3 weeks maybe, they had had those discussions both with Jerry Sandusky and the head of the Second Mile, and they went well, and the matter was closed. I'm able to reconstruct, however, from an email exchange that the free report gave great credence to that I apparently did show a little more, that I did know a little more, sorry. There was a follow-up. A couple of weeks after that, there was another kind of heads-up meeting, probably very brief because I had been out of town on a fundraising trip for several days. And because I had been out of town for a few days, my secretary had loaded up my calendar with a series of, you know, everybody needs you on Sunday, some physical plant project, women's basketball game, and there was some other meeting later in the afternoon, and sandwiched in there on my calendar was a notation, stop by Tim Curley's office on the way to the basketball game. Apparently, that meeting was moved to my house because the meeting before and the meeting after, we were going to do something. The email exchange was a couple of days after with Tim Curley saying, I've thought about things some more since Sunday. I'm going to touch base with the coach, and that's my plan now. And I wrote back that even basically, sounds like a reasonable plan and a humane approach. And I hope he hears the message, because if he doesn't hear the message, we could be vulnerable. That's the one, of course, everybody's heard about. What I meant by humane was I thought it was humane of Tim to want to go the extra mile by meeting with Jerry and saying, Jerry, I hope you understand that we don't want this to happen, and we're going to tell the Second Mile. And if you want to accompany me to that meeting with the Second Mile, you may come with me. I thought that was a very humane way to follow up on something like that. I think what many people wanted to read into was humane for us not to turn him over for being a known child predator. But I never heard anything about child abuse or sexual abuse. And my antenna raised up enough to even suspect. And my antenna was not raised up enough to even suspect that. So I know that's been taken out of context, and I suspect that whoever leaked those emails wanted them to be taken out of context. At that Sunday meeting, I don't recall that anything in particular was agreed to, only that Tim and Gary apparently had been conferring along the way about what to do and what the process was. And I was brought into it at the end. I think maybe the next time I heard about it was in very early January 2011, maybe in the first few days. It could have been in early, the last few days of December, somewhere in that vicinity.
And I recall hearing from the university's general counsel, Cynthia Baldwin, that Tim Curry, Gary Schultz, and Joe Paterno had been subpoenaed before a grand jury, and I presume she told me that the topic was Jerry Sandusky. I remember very early in 2011 saying to Cynthia, I recall something about that about a decade ago. I remember that I had received a heads up about an incident in the shower. You know, I don't remember a lot, but if I could ever be helpful to the law enforcement folks, I'd be happy to do that. She said, they're not interested in talking to you. The others are going to be talking to them at some point. So this is all in the New Yorker article with Jeffrey Toobin. I had no idea. It surprised me because I was thinking, well, why would they be looking at something in the shower? I had no idea, and Baldwin didn't say anything to me. Either heard or surmised it had something to do with the 2001 incident, but I didn't know the magnitude of it. In fact, until I read the grand jury presentment very quickly on Saturday, November 5th, I think it would have been, I had no idea that it was anything about more than that one shower. In that period from January, February, March, she only gave me a report that these folks are going to the grand jury. She told me something along the way that they were interviewing staff in the football program, and she would be there for all the interviews. But she never told me what was asked about in the interview. She never told me what came up with Curley and Schultz in their testimony. Paterno had his own attorney in the grand jury, so she wasn't there for that. I was very much in the dark about it, and I had reiterated to her that if they ever want to talk to me, I'd be happy to talk to them. At some point, she came to me and said they would like to talk to you. So I met with them in State College, and they asked me some questions about the incident. And I told them just what I told you, and they said, do you know anything about the incident in 1998? At that time, I said, no, I don't recall knowing anything about that. They were pretty straightforward questions, and that was that, and I didn't think much about it. So then Spanier, and whether he ever asked Baldwin what the grand jury investigation was about. Yes, I did. And he says, she said, you know, this is the third or fourth grand jury. They seem to be pursuing this horseplay shower incident, and they don't seem to have anything. There's nothing there. She seemed pretty confident that this does not rise to a higher level. But then she came to me and said, the grand jury does want to see you. And I said, oh, all right, I'm happy to go. The early questions in my grand jury meeting were just the usual, very routine stuff. What do you do for a living? But then about halfway through my grand jury testimony, something changed. There was a level of tension that was elevated. The assistant attorney general said to me in a very strong way, he mentioned the word sodomy. I can't remember exactly what the question was. Whether it was I aware of sodomy, or did I approve of sodomy, or did I know what sodomy was? Something about sodomy. This is in April 2011. I was stunned. I said, this is the first time I'd ever heard anything like that. I had no idea what you were asking me about. But, you know, even when he used the term, I wasn't sure if maybe they were just doing it to get a rise out of me, or why at this point ask me something like that, when all the discussions were about horseplay in the shower, which I was conjuring up, snapping towels and something like that. He said, I just said, no, no idea, no concept. That was the first I heard that they might be thinking about something more serious. But up until November 5th, I still thought it was about the one incident in the shower. And I had been told by our general counsel that was about that incident in the shower, which I knew about only because I'd gotten the report from Curley and Schultz, and nothing was said about anything sexual. Around that same time, something was in the newspaper that Jerry Sandusky was being investigated. Right away after my grand jury testimony, we arranged a discussion with the chair of the Board of Trustees and the general counsel to inform the Board of Trustees in a private session, which we did. And I kept the chair of the board informed and other leaders when the opportunity arose. Going to the very end of October, early November now, Cynthia Baldwin came to see me. This would have been a little more than a week before the grand jury presentment, saying that Jerry Sandusky was going to be charged, and so were Tim Curley and Gary Schultz. I presume she didn't know what the charges against Sandusky were going to be, If she knew, she didn't tell me, but I presumed it was about the one incident in the shower. Had I known there was going to be 45 counts of child molestation, I would have mobilized it even more strongly to prepare for it. But at the time, he hadn't been our employee for 13 years, and we have no obligation to him, and we need to stay away from that. But Tim Curley and Gary Schultz were employees of the university, so right away we informed the chair, Steve Garvin. I mean, within minutes, he came over for a meeting. We talked it through, and we began the process. On November 5th, the day after the charges were filed, Spanier issued the following statement. The allegations about a former coach are troubling, and it is appropriate that they be investigated thoroughly. Protecting children requires the utmost vigilance. With regard to other presentments, I wish to say that Tim Curley and Gary Schultz have my unconditional support. I have known and worked daily with Tim and Gary for more than 16 years. I have complete confidence in how they handle the allegations about a former employee. Tim Curley and Gary Schultz operate at the highest level of honesty, integrity, and compassion. I'm confident the record will show that these charges are groundless and they conducted themselves professionally and appropriately. And, of course, then the article goes on to say how Dr. Spanier was heavily criticized for that statement. He said, if you go back and look at the, and then he picks up the story himself here. If you go back and look at the statement, the first paragraph was a statement of concern about the charges, about our concern for the children and the victims. That paragraph was ignored by all the media. They went right to the next paragraph, which I said I've known and worked with Tim Curley and Gary Schultz for 16 years, and I support them. I was, and probably still am, criticized for being supportive of them. To this day, I'm probably the only person who said anything positive about them. Everyone else has run for the hills. The Board of Trustees has cited their displeasure with the fact that I supported them in that way. But there's more to the story. The statement was carefully reviewed by the chair of the Board of Trustees, and I presume by the vice chair of the board, because he supported, and he was supposed to touch base with them. It was reviewed by the university's legal counsel. It was gone over by our university relations staff. It was not just a rash let's run out and be insensitive to potential victims and say nothing, just defend Gary Schultz and Tim Curley no matter what. The chair of the board said, that is exactly the statement I would write. He was very supportive of us. Statement. Us that Saturday, just a little before noon. I didn't know if he was aware of the charges at that point. I wanted to make sure that and quite stunned by the whole thing. I then called the administration of the university. All the people were reported to me on Saturday afternoon. There were about 30 of us in my conference room. All the people were reported to Gary Schultz. I invited Gary and Tim to be there to hear what I was going to say. Tim did not want to come. He was stunned by this, and it was a terrible blow to him. Gary wanted to be there to hear what I had to say. So it was all of Gary Schultz's direct reports, all of my direct reports, 30 of the senior people of the university and the chair of the Board of Trustees there. So the first thing I did was brief them of the charges. Most of them already heard something breaking on the news. I then turned over to the chair of the board and asked him to make comments to the group, and he did. And we talked about what a terrible crisis this was in so many ways. Now, at this point, there were charges against Sandusky. We had this innocent till proven guilty, so we didn't make any judgments about anybody or anything. But we knew that it was a crisis for the university because we would be associated with this in one way or another. Would you like me to continue after the break?
That would be great.
We will after this on News Radio 1070 WKOK. New Yorker Jeffrey Toobin, who for many years has done work with ABC, and ABC will interview Dr. Grant Spanier tonight. As Sarah Bartlett's pointed out several times, it'll be on Nightline. His attorney tell the press conference today. They came out swinging on all this. I'll get to the part why he felt that Curley and Schultz were innocent. I don't know with certainty, but what I did know is that what they told me. I can't imagine today why, on what basis, they would have withheld any information or shaded it differently. I just don't believe that. You work with people who are in and out of your office every day. You travel game. You have hundreds of meals with them. He said Penn State isn't like other places. The point I want to make about Penn State is that this may be a big place, but we've always operated like a family.
Our personal and social and professional lives are very intertwined. It's all wrapped up together. And I would have never started to come out at the university. No, absolutely not. I never thought about it. That's what would have been the ideal. If you look at my personal and professional background, this is Graham Spanier now speaking. I mean, first of all, I'm an intervener. My apologies. I'm an intervener. And I never shied away from a problem. I was the first one on it. I would never give somebody else responsibility for intervening or making a tough decision. When I got reports of bad news, I never wanted somebody to think they couldn't make a report because I was going to find out who they were and confront them. By the way, that part's very true, just in knowing him for 16 years. On Sunday night, we had a meeting of the board of trustees. I started the meeting by saying to the board, this is going to be very difficult for the university. I need to tell you something. I need to tell you absolutely everything that I know about this, so you have no doubt about what I know and my modest involvement, because you need to have confidence in my ability to lead. And it goes on from there. So that'll be Nightline tonight.
And the New Yorker link, by the way, is on stevejonesshow.com. So check
Jeffrey
it out there.
Toobin, this is just to give everybody his perspective. Again, if you believe him, you believe him. If you don't, you don't. But you don't pass judgment till you have all the statements in.